And support for WMNF comes from our members and Goodwill Industries Suncoast, committed to helping people achieve their full potential through employment services, training, and affordable housing. The sale of donated items at Goodwill stores supports services to people locally and contributes to community conservation. More at goodwill-suncoast.org. Good afternoon. You are listening to WMNF 88.5 FM. This is Community Radio from West Central Florida. Welcome to Executive Session, your forum for the discussion of the executive branch of your United States government. I'm John Gilmore, and joining us this afternoon is Adam Baxt, who will be doing his dead level best to keep us between the guardrails.
That's correct. Great to be here.
And as you know, that can be quite challenging. And anyway, as we normally do on Wednesday, we're going to open today with a segment of Everyday Ethics. We opened last Wednesday in Everyday Ethics. We started a conversation about suicide, and we talked about some very personal views and experiences and reminded each other that you are not alone. In this episode of Everyday Ethics, we finished that conversation. We're going to be discussing the media's handling of suicide. And we repeat, you are not alone. Call 211. Someone's there. Online, thecrisiscenter.com here in Tampa. Someone's there. Nationally, call 800-273-TALK. That's 8255. And someone's there. You're not alone. You can reach this conversation and join us by dialing 813-239-9663. You can reach us by email at dj@wmnf.org or by text at 813-433-0885. Be sure and search for Executive Session on Facebook and like and follow the page, because we often have very interesting discussions there. And we are also spiraling up towards 500 followers and 500 likes, and it would be fun to reach that. So if you are interested in that and you get any of your social media on Facebook, join us there. So before we go any further, we are going to listen to Everyday Ethics. Maybe. Let's see. I think that what will happen is, if we push the right button, it'll work.
All this media coverage of celebrity suicide, is that a bad thing? This is Everyday Ethics.
Everyday Ethics is a production of WMNF Tampa, in conjunction with the Poynter Institute. Poynter, a global leader in journalism. Additional support is provided by NYU Langone Medical Center, one of the nation's premier academic medical centers devoted to patient care, education, and research.
From the studios of WMNF Radio in Tampa, Florida, I'm Craig Kopp. Welcome to Everyday Ethics, where we talk about things that are happening in our world and try to take them apart ethically and let you kind of put them back together again and make some ethical decisions on your own. When I say we, I'm talking about Art Kaplan. He's a medical ethicist. He's joining us today from NYU's Langone Medical Center in New York City. Hi, Art.
Hey.
And media ethicist Kelly McBride. She's at the Poynter Institute in St. Petersburg, Florida. Hello, Kelly.
Across the bay and not afraid to talk about suicide.
Okay, so we already know where we're at, but there certainly has been a lot of coverage. There's been a couple of very high-profile suicides of late.
Do celebrity suicides lead to more suicides? Unfortunately, in many cases, the answer is yes.
After someone famous takes their life, there's usually copycats. You usually see a spike in the number of suicides.
One of the most famous stars in Hollywood history is dead at 36.
When iconic sex symbol Marilyn Monroe took her life in 1962, the suicide rate in the U.S. jumped 12%. Even fellow celebrities can get obsessed. Kate Spade was reportedly fixated with the way Robin Williams hanged himself in 2014. psychiatrist Dr. Jody Gold.
We're all shocked by the death of Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade, and that's reasonable and understandable. But if your friends or loved one are still focusing on this a few weeks or a month from now, you need to reach out. That is a warning sign for suicide, and you need to reach out and get them help.
All right, Kelly, we kind of already know where you stand, and we did a whole segment on our responsibility in terms of understanding and trying to prevent suicide before this. All this talk is not putting the idea of suicide in people's heads?
Not this kind of talk that we're doing right here. There is some very specific talk about suicide that the media is particularly guilty of that does create a contagion. When the media describe the means of death, when they ascribe specific details to that means of death, like they did with Kate Spade in particular, mm-hmm. also with Robin Williams, when they glorify the individual, which is really hard not to do when it's a celebrity, especially a beloved celebrity like Anthony Bourdain, when they wallow in the grief of the people left behind, those are the things that lead to what experts call a contagion effect. We saw this after Robin Williams. What we saw with Robin Williams is a public official reading from a sheriff's report describing on live television in a press conference the very specific, in very graphic details, means of death and the discovery of Robin Williams' body. In the 2 months after that, those types of suicides went up by more than 20%.
Wow.
Yeah, so we know, and there's all sorts of other studies that show that there are certain things that the media does that create contagion and also can create what's known as a cluster of suicides, which is a particular phenomenon among young people, usually in a high school or in a specific geographic area, sometimes at a college, sometimes in another, like, young 20-something setting, maybe a military unit or something like that, where you see a cluster of suicides. There are ways that we can talk about suicide that will prevent those clusters, but we have to understand it. One of the solutions, I think, is to talk about suicide more overall, so that our overall conversation is more informed and more about the trends and less about these very specific instances where a celebrity or a popular person commits suicide.
Art, the medical community agree that, you know, talking about means of taking one's life and that sort of thing can result in this kind of contagion? Is there such a thing as contagion of suicide?
Yeah, there definitely is. We know, as Kelly was just saying, that there are sort of networks where suicide spreads in a school or sometimes even in a medical school class. We've seen that phenomena with people sort of using the same method. So giving instructions and details about how to, that's certainly not what you want. Although I have to say, if we went up on the internet speaking about what Facebook or Google permit or Twitter, you could find instructions and advice about how to kill yourself. It's all there. You can Google it up and see different methods. It's described. Hollywood does it too. They show you different things in movies and entertainment as to how to do it or, you know, what steps to take. And I think that's all understood to be bad. There's also tension here because it's odd to say it, but medicine has come to accept some forms of suicide among the terminally ill. Mm-hmm. So we have a physician-assisted suicide or physician-assisted dying movement in the U.S. with some states enacting laws that permit those who are dying to have help in dying so that they can end their lives on their own terms. I'm not against that. I actually have sort of changed my views and come out in favor. But the whole discussion, it makes you nervous that there's a legitimation of suicide that might get in the minds of others who are not terminally ill. So there's a tension in the U.S. about when is it appropriate to end your life. And we do not say never to that, by the way. We say rarely. But I'm not sure how that gets heard by the vulnerable.
Kelly, when we're talking about this in the media's responsibility, in our time, everybody is now the media.
It's true.
Everybody's discussion on Facebook and Twitter concerning the most recent celebrity suicides, I don't think they're thinking about what we just talked about that the media should be thinking about when they're reporting on this.
And they absolutely should be. I mean, the way I found out about Kate Spade's death was from a friend's post on Facebook. And she mentioned the very specific means in her post. And I know she didn't mean to cause any harm, but it took me aback. Yeah, I've talked for years to journalists and to editors about the best practices, and we have made real headway in the media. Our next step is going to be to formalize these best practices in codes of conduct for journalism organizations. But there's no real code of conduct for the rest of us and how we talk about it, which is why we simply need to get a little more informed. Or one of the things that could happen is, you know, Facebook has made a lot of efforts to get people help. So if you type in suicide, Facebook will automatically give you a prompt that, do you need help? Do you need help for a friend? You can go through steps. You can get to professional counselors. You can get to a suicide hotline. But should Facebook create an algorithm that makes it impossible for you to post that way? It's a really interesting question. Probably may have more unintended consequences, because every time Facebook makes an algorithm to prevent something, it prevents things that it doesn't intend to prevent, right? Like, you can't show topless photos, and then suddenly you can't show, you know, an iconic news photo or a statue of Venus or something like that.
Hey, Kelly, I've got a question that is up your alley, because you teach this and think about it, and Poynter does too. We've talked about, you know, journalism and how they should cover suicide and report on it. I'm just curious, you watched the coverage post Spade and Bourdain. How did you think people did?
You know, I think we did better with Bourdain than Kate Spade. And here's my theory of why that is. These best practices have been around for a while, and they are widely known in the journalism community. But like I said, they have not, most of them, been formally put into codes of conduct or ethics codes for news organizations. It's an oral tradition, basically. When we make mistakes in the media, we make most of our mistakes in a breaking news situation within the first 2 hours of the information happening. And many of the people who are responsible for creating the social media posts or the news alerts that come to your phone or sending out the wire alerts to other news organizations, many of those are younger employees with less than 5 years experience. It's an entry-level job. And so if it's your first time handling a major celebrity suicide, you're likely to make some mistakes. And because there's a lot of turnover in that level of employee, that's why we need to formalize this. And I saw a ton of mistakes with Kate Spade in the headline, in the social text, the sort of text that's meant to draw your attention to it. A lot of mistakes there. Anthony Bourdain, not as many. I did see one organization that quickly corrected it. They had said Anthony Bourdain, and then they put in there that he had killed himself in the headline, and then they changed it to a more neutral headline, Anthony Bourdain dead at 61, I believe was his age.
In all of this, Kelly, it's interesting. I know how Kate Spade killed herself. I don't know how Anthony Bourdain killed himself. I don't know if that's because I don't want to know, and so I'm avoiding reading anything, or is it because the one happened and organizations like Poynter said, hey, you guys don't do this kind of stuff, and they stopped doing it for Anthony Bourdain?
I think that's exactly what happened. I think that with Kate Spade, it was widely reported early on. With Anthony Bourdain, it was reported, but it wasn't reported as widely. You know, what I tell news organizations is, I don't tell them you can't report it at all. I tell them, don't put it in the headline. Don't put it in the cut line. Don't put it in the shareable information that's going to be spread. Put it halfway down in the text of the story. And that way, people who are super curious and really want to find out, they can find out, but it doesn't become the focal point of the story.
Was there any sexism involved in the reporting of these two things? Because I saw an awful lot about Kate Spade's personal life and a little less about Anthony Bourdain's.
I don't know. There was a lot of focus on Kate Spade left children behind, mm-hmm. Anthony Bourdain left a child behind. Mm-hmm. Mothers always get a harder rap mm-hmm. for how they raise their kids than fathers do mm-hmm. and the choices that they make. That was probably part of that, I think.
I'll tell you what I didn't see in the coverage. Again, I'm not sure when it should happen, but it's reminding me, what is the impact on surviving children, spouses, family members of a suicide? Is that worse, better if someone dies young because of cancer or motor vehicle accident or something else? And I also haven't seen people say, and here's what happens to estates, and here's what happens legally, and this is what happens in terms of the fallout for the family in terms of handling suicide. I don't know myself, you know, what sorts of legal things happen or what sorts of insurance things happen or whatever, but I don't remember seeing much about that.
Kelly, is it good to report that kind of stuff or bad?
You got to report it carefully. Mm. The stories that talk about the devastation that's left behind can lead to contagion. Some of the more clinical stories or the stories that might be more matter of fact, I mean, it's interesting. Is planning a funeral for somebody who has died by suicide different than planning a funeral for somebody else? That might be an interesting question to explore. And I don't know that I've ever seen that explored, because it used to be that when somebody died by suicide, if you were reading the obits in the paper, the way you knew was they didn't mention the cause of death.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's mm-hmm. not as common now, because sometimes we don't mention the cause of death for other reasons as well.
Mm-hmm.
But it still is, I think, one of the hints. We rarely say in somebody's obituary that he or she took her own life.
In addition to planning the funeral and what does that mean and who speaks and is it any different and so forth, and should the minister or whoever say anything about how they died when everybody knows probably who's there. I used to hear that insurance policies voided and you couldn't claim, you know, certain benefits if you were suicide.
I think that's still true.
And I don't know what that means or how that works, or can you challenge it, or I don't know.
There's a lot of unknown questions about when you're dealing with the death of a relative by suicide that would be valid explorations, given the fact that it's the 10th leading cause of death in the United States, and that it's gone up by 30% since 2000.
But you might want to put it in your future file and not do it right around a big celebrity suicide. I don't know.
Exactly. Yeah.
Kelly, just to make sure, because all of a sudden I feel this great responsibility as a Facebook user and a Twitter user, give me the top three things not to talk about again, so we can all know what we're doing here around these things.
Don't talk about the means of suicide. Don't oversimplify the reasons for suicide. She committed suicide because her partner broke up with her, something like that. And also, don't glorify the individual, you know, make them out to be a saint. Those are the three things not to do. Let me talk about what you should do, though.
Yes, okay.
What you should do is talk about the fact that most people who think about suicide don't actually commit suicide. Most of them find a better place. That's a story that we're not telling. If suicide is the 10th highest cause of death in the United States, then a lot more people are thinking about suicide. And what we want to do is send a message to those people that there's hope, that you actually are likely to get to a better place. Some of you will do it through talk therapy. Some of you will do it just by changing some circumstances in your life. And some of you won't even know how you do it. Chemistry in your brain will just change and you'll get through this period. And that's what we need to tell people, is that for most people who are thinking about suicide, it's going to get better.
For Kelly McBride and Art Kaplan, I'm Craig Kopp, and this is Everyday Ethics. Knowing the difference between what you have a right to do and what's right to do. Everyday Ethics is produced and edited by Dustin Hapley. Our researcher is
Christina Sokorenku. Also, the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline is 1-800-273-8255.
What are your thoughts about how you've seen the media cover suicide. Has media coverage been disturbing? Have you seen signs of the contagion they talked about in Everyday Ethics? How would you change the way you have heard the media cover deaths by suicide? 813-239-9663. We'll get you in contact with Mr. Jeff Haynes this afternoon. He's going to want to know your first name, and he is going to get you ready to step into executive session and take the floor. We're joined this afternoon by Adam Baxt, who is here to do his very best to keep us in the road.
Yes, sir.
So, this is a very sensitive subject, and locally, you can reach someone at crisiscenter.com here in Tampa. That's local. Or you can call 211. Someone's there. You are not alone. And we're going to start off with Andy this afternoon. Andy, good afternoon. You're in executive session. You have the floor.
Good afternoon. I'm sorry to come out with this take because I'm afraid if it's going to drive the conversation too far off sides. But I was really intrigued by the last guest that were on that segment talking about media best practices with the relation to covering suicides. I would just like to open the discussion up to applying those best practices to covering gunmen's after mass shootings, not the mass shootings themselves, but the actual individual, the character.
Mm-hmm.
And what, you know, I'd like to open the floor to discussion, like what would be some best practices that the media and really people on social media could employ to, you know, help with the, I don't know, the maybe the lack of coverage that we need with regard to the gunmen themselves.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a little off topic, and it is also it's also clearly related, and I appreciate you drawing the connection, because there is, I think, I have heard conversations about what they what Everyday Ethics called contagion, which is the imitation of, you know. And so I think that a discussion of best practices around the kinds of mass shootings that we see on a fairly regular basis is also, I think, is also germane. So I appreciate it. Do you have any thoughts on it?
Well, I mean, I'd really like to hear the discussion on it, but, you know, me personally, you know, I think a best practice to deploy would, you know, put less emphasis and less focus on the shooter themselves,
mm-hmm.
Even perhaps up to the point where their names aren't even mentioned.
Uh-huh. So it's so,
you know, again, that's kind of my take on it. I really like to hear other people's takes, especially yours.
Well, Andy, I'll tell you what, I am a big fan of factual reporting and complete reporting, and I also understand the nature of publicity. And I also understand the attraction of publicity, and I also understand the attraction to what we would kind of ghastly call fame in these matters. And so I can see an argument for not publishing someone's name, for not publishing the personal information of someone who carries out such a crime.
Okay, great. That's great to hear your take.
Yeah, I think that's an argument that's there to be made, and that inevitably, you are going to have access to the court records, if there are any, and the police records,
indeed,
if there are any.
Indeed.
But that's the kind of thing that you have to go look at. You have to go find that stuff.
Right.
So you're not going to you're not going to find that stuff on your news feed on your phone, you know, mm-hmm. as a routine presentation. So yeah, I can see that. I can see that. I am also equally interested in other people's take on that, as well as the way that we started out, which is the way media covers suicide. You got any thoughts on that? About what have you seen? Has it affected you at all? How does that look to you?
Well, I think they're linked, which is, you know, why I brought it up.
Yeah.
I think people that are maybe contemplating suicide, and by that same token, people that are in a dark place where they're possibly contemplating a shooting,
mm-hmm.
You know, I think they're going through, you know, very difficult times, and when they see something like that on the, in the media, they see the person that committed suicide or the mass shooter glorified, I mean, certainly in a negative way,
mm-hmm.
but glorified nonetheless, I think it attracts them and can maybe, perhaps in some cases, be a catalyst to them going ahead and following through with the deed.
All right. There is a viewpoint to kick us off in a discussion this afternoon of a very serious conversation, very serious topic, about which we would remind you once again, you are not alone. And thank you, Andy. With any luck, we will talk again.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure enough. All right, we're gonna interrupt the conversation we just started very, very briefly for some information about some people who are helping with helping you support your radio station, and also some of the things that are going on around your radio station. Support for WMNF comes from our members in Happy Feet Plus, a locally owned and operated full-service footwear store featuring Kenco massage sandals. Happy Feet Plus, footwear for a healthier you since 1985. More at happyfeet.com. On August 19th, WMNF will be honoring Tampa Bay individuals and organizations who are sowing the seeds of equality and peace and promoting social, economic, and environmental justice. It's our first ever Hometown Heroes celebration. From now until July 15th, you can nominate a person or a group as a hometown hero. Go to WMNF.org for more information and to make a nomination.
I hear talk shows where people actually talk to each other.
Welcome to WMNF Tampa.
All right. Back to the conversation. We are talking about the Everyday Ethics episode that we heard just a little while ago, about the media's role in reporting suicide and whether or not that has a hand in fomenting contagion, or whether it's disturbing and interesting to hear your viewpoints in the matter. We are going to go and talk to Daryl. Good afternoon. You're in executive session, but you knew that.
Yeah, good afternoon. How you doing?
I'm doing all right, and I'm, you know, and I'm glad to hear from you.
Yeah. First, let me say that the last time you talked about this subject, I really liked what you had to say. And I mentioned one other person. I want to mention two other people who talked on this subject. I don't mean to be putting them. I hope y'all don't get offended out there. I don't mean it in an offensive way. I love what Miss Elizabeth had to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I especially love what Miss Ayada had to say.
Mm-hmm.
And that was true about fear.
Uh-huh.
It's something that we don't have control of, what's going to happen tomorrow or what the situation is going to be the next time. But to specifically talk about what they were talking about in Everyday Ethics, do you remember the person who was the main character in this television series, Hogan's Heroes?
Mm-hmm.
And remember, he committed suicide. And a lot
I believe his name was Bob Crane.
Bob Crane, but a lot of people, we can't remember back then. We can't really feel a thing of that one.
Uh-huh.
But remember Robin Williams? Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm.
He made me laugh.
Yeah.
Mork and Mindy, and especially the movie Good Morning Vietnam.
Yeah.
And let me quickly jump to Mr. Anthony Bourdain.
Mm-hmm.
We look at those individuals. They seem to have, they got it. They got life by the horn. That's what they seem to have. They're making all the money they want. He's traveling all over the world, eating all kinds of foods and things. And he seems to be enjoying his element that he's in.
Gotta say, Anthony Bourdain had the job I always wanted.
Yeah, and you looking at him, and he's like, "Oh, my life would be so fulfilled, and I wouldn't have any problems if I was living that kind of life." And we think because we have things or have all the money in the world, we're living in that house and that neighborhood, you know, everything will be okay, and they don't have no kind of problems.
Mm-hmm.
And one other thing they touched on that show was about the way that they committed suicide.
Uh-huh.
Well, I kind of disagree with what they were saying. If they shot them, okay, granted, there's not a lot of tact to want to go in there because there's always the curious side of us. We always want to stop and look at the accident. We want to slow down.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you might not like what you see, but you slow down because the curious side of you, we wanted to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they just blurted it out there. Anthony Bourdain did blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Himself and killed himself. And it's like, you didn't even give me the opportunity. Did I want to hear that?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's bad enough to know that he's no longer in the world, but then you had to tell me why he's not in the world and how he did it. And
I see.
You got some people, they want to dig into the stuff about the dark soul of Anthony Bourdain. He was on this, and he was in drugs, and he was in... We don't necessarily want to hear that. But the thing that I got from that was we think that because we have all of these things that they will complete us. And all I guess I would say, it's not going to be deep and going to be profound.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have all the answers in the world. You don't have all the answers in the world. Nobody really does. But it's that you got to love yourself. And I'm not talking about being narcissistic like 45. But I'm talking about love yourself. And that you are right. That let me correct myself. Yeah, it's real. What you're dealing with. And we ain't going to lie to you about it because that's you and you're dealing with it right now. And mm-hmm. Yeah, it's real. But
yeah, one of the things that I learned to stop saying to people was I know what that's like.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you ain't me. And no, you don't know what it's like. And like, yeah. I ain't you. And I don't know what you're going to have to deal with on Friday.
See, well, I can say authentically, I know what that would be like if I was there. You know what I mean? I have some hint about what it would be like if I was there, but I do not claim to know what it's like that you are there.
And let me say this before I go, because you got a lot of callers. I empathize with you. I know what it's like to deal with something that's hurting. And yeah, you're hurting.
Yeah.
It's real. It's real. But talk to a friend.
Yeah.
If you got to go to a park somewhere and know you're not going to buy yourself whatever, do harm to yourself, if you got to cry, cry. They don't make you less than a man. You ain't no punk. You ain't no... Cry it out.
Mm-hmm.
If you believe in the Lord or Christ or whatever, talk to him. People don't think, you talk to God, you cry. Look, if that brings you peace and solace, do it.
Yeah.
Talk to a friend. Don't be. Tell somebody. Somebody that you know. And if you somebody new to want to talk to you, don't. No, you ain't got to have all the answers. Shut up and just listen.
Yeah. Listen, Daryl.
I'm finna get off your ass.
You nailed it, boss. I appreciate your comments, and I also your passion in the matter is evident, and I really appreciate you bringing that to your comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sure enough. Go ahead, Adam.
We have a question coming in from Jean. And she wants to know if we had any sort of discussion about how the U.S. compares to other nations in suicide rates. And
yeah,
last week we did talk about this, in, the U.S. ranks 38, according to the latest report of World Review.
Okay.
Behind some surprising nations that many wouldn't figure, like Sweden, France, Finland, stuff like that.
All right, so there's the answer to your question. Thank you very much, Adam. I appreciate it. And... don't know exactly how that happened without the mic being on, but there it is. One of them mysteries of one of the many mysteries of broadcasting. All right, here we go. Back to the phones. We are going to talk to David. We're going to talk to you, David. Good afternoon, David. You're in executive session this afternoon. You have the floor.
Thank you. About 55 years ago, when I was in college, there was a doctor, PhD candidate, who was studying suicide.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's probably the genesis of a number of the call lines. I can't remember his name.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he committed suicide. But the issue was getting someone who was contemplating suicide to contact and speak to someone outside of the whatever circle it was that they were in that mm-hmm. caused them to think about suicide and then to try to do it. Another thing that came out of all these statistics, and there were a lot of statistics, is that, and it may be still true, that women attempt suicide more than men, but when men attempt suicide, they're usually successful.
Yeah.
So we know how to, I don't know if that's still effective or not.
Yeah, I heard, I actually think that was part of the discussion from last week, that they, exactly what you just said. So I believe you are absolutely correct.
It was a discussion I had about 55 years ago with this PhD candidate, because we were collecting the data for him, or we were assimilating, totaling it up, and then he made the conclusions based on his expertise in psychology.
Uh-huh.
But I guess it's just to talk to each other, and it's same time, could somebody discuss with me, because I avoid the social media. I avoid Facebook
uh-huh.
for various reasons, mainly professional. At the same time, I save all the things from my email where people want me to get on Facebook with them. But if we're communicating more and more and more with each other, we shouldn't have this increase in this suicide rate.
Yeah, seems kind of paradoxical, doesn't it, that we are on one level ever so much more immediately and completely connected with each other than we ever have, and somehow we have this spike in people taking their own lives. I don't fully understand that. My experience is that one of the first things that I want people in distress to know is that they're not alone. They're not isolated. They're not. There's nothing wrong with the fact that they are so very much in pain.
Yes.
You know.
Well, you know, I've never been there, so I can't get there. I have a friend now who seems to be going in that direction. So mm-hmm. when I send emails, it's an email to say, you know, let's do something.
Yeah.
Want to go out and do something, we'll do something.
Yeah. Well, just, you know, that's the thing. If you see someone around you that that gives you concern, if you're worried about somebody, it is authentic friendship to reach out and just say, are you okay? I'm over here.
That's all you can do with some folks, too.
Yeah.
And generally, people in that situation mentally is that they believe that they have the answer, and the answer is they're no good to anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They're telling you that. So when they tell you that, you're the only one that can react, and they're not going to talk to anybody else.
Yeah. I gave up the notion of pep talks, and I started doing a lot more of what Daryl was talking about, which was listening.
Of course.
Yeah. So listen, but speaking of listening,
yeah. Get somebody else on the line.
Thank you very much, David. I appreciate your remarks. We'll talk again. All right, we are going to take one more step away from this conversation. Elizabeth and Les, we see you there. You can reach us at 813-239-9663. Jeff Haynes will answer your call to get you ready to step on in here. We are talking about media and how they cover suicide. Is it? Have you found it to be distressing? Have you seen any signs of they spoke in the Everyday Ethics about a contagion where there would be something like a rash of suicides, or would you change the way? How would you change the way that you have heard the media cover deaths by suicide? And we will be right back to that conversation in about a minute.
The WMNF Americana Fest takes place July 14th at Skipper's Smokehouse. The annual summer event is a great showcase for roots rockin' bands from the Southeast. The lineup includes the Hummingbirds, Oak Ramble, American Songbox, Matt Woods, Hangtown, Band of Sorrows, Cottondale Swamp, Joshua Riley, Hannah Harbor and the Lionhearts, and the 502s. 4 p.m. to midnight, the WMNF Americana Fest.
Hi, this is Sue Budry with the WMNF community announcement. Islam is the second largest religion in the world, yet misperceptions about Islam and Muslims abound. Pathways to Understanding, a joint project between Community Tampa Bay and the Tampa Bay Times Newspaper and Education Program, is confronting misunderstandings about Muslims in America. More information can be found at tampabay.com/NIE/pathways.
WMNF's HD3 channel, The Source, offers many quality public radio news and talk shows. Every day on The Source, we carry programs like the Ralph Nader Radio Hour, Tom Hartman, the BBC World Service, and many more. Listening is easy. Just go to wmnf.org/listen or tap The Source on the WMNF smartphone app. All right, back to the conversation. We are talking about the media coverage of suicide as we listen to Everyday Ethics and that discussion. And your thoughts about what you see around you as far as the media coverage of suicide. Do you think that it should be changed? Has it affected you in any way? And we're going to go and we're going to talk to Elizabeth. Good afternoon, Elizabeth. You're in executive session. Your patience is astonishing. Thank you very much.
I enjoy listening to everything on your program, John. Daryl, of course, he always hits it right on the head. I, however, would like to talk about another section of suicide, another angle of it.
Yeah.
There are people, well, you know, Dr. Kevorkian, remember him? Where is he when you need him? Well, he's dead now. But there are people who are truly terminally ill.
Yeah.
And in my viewpoint, they should be allowed to medically commit suicide.
Mm-hmm.
It should be all medically handled, two doctors, three doctors, I don't care, however many, to make certain that the wool is not being pulled over the eyes and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But someone who truly is in that position is hurting, is costing an awful lot of money to keep them alive.
Mm-hmm.
And there again, what happens to the will, the property that is left after a suicide?
Mm-hmm.
All of those things should be handled beforehand.
Yeah.
They should be allowed to end this miserable, hurtful life that they are living.
Mm-hmm.
And their family should not be prevented from receiving anything that is left in the estate. That, to me, is criminal, to make someone live out a miserable life and just not help them.
Yeah, I see your point, and it's an interesting kind of contradiction in a certain way. Excuse me. Because I believe everyone's life is their own.
Yeah.
And I believe that, that people are responsible for and should be open to make the decisions that are, you know, theirs.
Yeah.
And the loss that is suicide, I mean, it's, like I said, and you can probably hear it, I'm pretty conflicted about it. I think that what you're talking about is basically the relief of pain.
Yeah.
And we've developed a kind of medical approach to medical treatment that is basically kind of summed up as save life at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you're right. I think that can lead to a considerable amount of suffering.
Yeah.
And I think it can lead to it's kind of crass in a certain kind of way to talk about money when you're thinking about people's lives.
It isn't. There's a family left behind.
But it's very, very real. It's very real. It's very something, very much something that people have to deal with.
Yes.
In dealing with, you know, you have a loved one who currently exists on a hospital bed, and there's more tubes running in and out of them than almost anything else.
Yeah.
And there, you know, is should do you want to support that life?
That's not a life.
Exactly. There you go. So I see the need for what you're talking about. I really do. And the distinction there between that and your 35-year-old who is depressed and who has experienced a loss and you know and doesn't want to continue to feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. I understand that too.
But that's where friends and help can come in.
I think
about the medical necessity.
Yeah, exactly. You're talking about dealing with the end of life as it is imminent anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see that, and this is a very powerful subject, and very it's hard to talk about because I think
no,
we were talking
not,
about
it. It's not
no, okay.
There's where I disagree with you.
Okay,
you know I'm 93.
Right,
I'm getting down there. I'm in good health.
Yeah,
I'm not going to wind up in the hospital with tubes and all of that sticking out of me. I hope one day my mother had an expression. He went to bed and woke up dead. Well, that's what I hope, that the good Lord just says, okay, and I don't wake up the next morning.
Uh-huh.
But I don't have any guarantee of that.
Yeah, there I think we can count on the fact that there are no guarantees of anything.
None.
So,
and I'm happy with that.
Yeah.
I what I have left in life, I accept. I enjoy what I can, and I'm bored with the rest. And what the hey?
Yeah. Well, listen, I for one very much appreciate your coming into these programs on a regular basis to share the viewpoint that you've gained over the time that you've been around.
I just can't keep my mouth shut.
Well, good for you. There's no point in it. You know.
John, just thank you kindly.
Give it out. All right, thanks, Elizabeth. We will talk again.
Yeah.
Sure enough. All right, 813-239-9663 as we roll up on the threshold of the lightning round here in the fastest hour in radio. And we're going to go talk to Les. Good afternoon, Les. You are in executive session, and you have the floor.
Hey, John. How are you doing today?
Not bad. It's a very, very interesting conversation.
Yes, it is. I think that anybody that's in the public spotlight and they commit suicide, it should be reported because there's a certain shock factor to it.
Mm-hmm.
And because of what Daryl said, and Daryl and Elizabeth are hard acts to follow. But as far as the cause of death and anything else to do with their personal life, I don't think that's anybody's business.
Uh-huh. So if you, the fact of someone's celebrity, as far as you're concerned, doesn't open their life up as a public document.
Exactly.
There you go.
It's their business. I mean, you know, I don't care if they hung themselves, shot themselves. The fact that they committed suicide and they're gone, that's a tragedy. But their personal life is nobody's business.
Okay, well, there's a viewpoint that we haven't heard before, and I appreciate you bringing it.
And I appreciate you, John.
Yeah, well, listen, I can't tell you the privilege it is to be here with this community for these 4 hours a week. This is incredible, and I thank you for bringing yourself to the conversation.
You do an awesome job, buddy.
Thank you. All right, we are now officially in the lightning round, so we're going to go and we're going to talk to Marie in St. Pete. Good afternoon, Marie. You're in executive session. You have the floor.
Hey there. With regards to how the media should cover it, or, you know, suicide, I think something was brought up. There was on CNN the other night, they had... I forget the late person, so-and-so, somebody. She discussed, you know, she had been in that position before, but she no longer was there. And I think it's really important. I think Dan Rather is the same.
Uh-huh.
I think it's just really important that we focus or make it more, let people know that there are many people who have been there, like they said in Everyday Ethics. People who have been there, but are still here.
Maybe we could have some folks who have had the experience you're describing, maybe a little public service campaign where that is communicated, where folks are folks who have had the personal experience that you talk about.
Right, and I mean, there's a big difference between, you know, somebody going through a bad time and getting depressed versus clinical depression, you know, and chemical imbalances and all that. But I think that more people have been there than people realize.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more people know that, they're more apt to, if they do get into that position, will realize there is a way out and that you're not always going to feel this way. And it is just a temporary thing. And
Well, there's that old cliche about permanent solutions to temporary problems.
Right. Right.
But I got to tell you that from my experience as a mental health tech, and from my experience in my life, there are times when there is no apparent light at the end of the tunnel you're looking down. So, you know, and depression can be very, very profoundly mysterious to the person suffering. They don't know why they don't know why they are suddenly feeling that way.
Right.
You know, and that's how come that always and forever my first reaction is, you're not alone.
Exactly.
You're just, I hear what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, and no matter that it feels that way, you are not alone.
Because that in itself is comforting.
Well, it's I think what one of the salient features of depression and one of the salient features of suicidal ideation is the experience of being isolated.
Yes, and it's very important that we have a support system to help you get through that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just find today that people are not quite as connected sometimes, even though we are socially connected and all.
Yeah, it's odd, isn't it?
Very, very odd.
You can
be a support system to a complete stranger.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be, you know, somebody that you know. And sometimes people say, oh, too much information, you know, I don't want to hear all this. Oh,
yeah.
Sometimes it's not a good thing. Yeah, you don't want to burden other people with your problems at the same time.
Yeah, that's a very common way that that I hear people isolate themselves. You know, oh, you don't want to hear about this. Well, I asked.
Yeah,
Okay, so you know, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. I'll take care of myself. And if it gets to be too much, I'll flee into the woods. Mm-hmm. But for right now, what's going on? What's going on?
We're all here on this earth to help each other. If we don't, God, where?
All right, listen, Marie. Thank you very much. I appreciate you've wrapped up the program this afternoon, and we'll talk again.
Your show.
All right. Robin, we're not going to get to talk to you. I want to close this this session reminding you that you are not alone. You can call 211. Someone's there. Online, you can reach thecrisiscenter.com here in Tampa. Someone's there. Nationally, 800-273-TALK. That's 8255, and someone's there. You are not alone. Stay tuned for It's the Music. We've got Scott Elliott in the house and Mr. Hawkins, and we are going to take you through the afternoon, get you ready to go home for the traffic jam, and executive session will convene once again this week on Buckle Up Thursday. This is WMNF Tampa.
Live from NPR News and